This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a magnificent president and chief operating officer. We're going to be talking to Mike LeChance of OneMedNet. We're talking today about real-world data and the promises and challenges of emerging imaging real-world data market and what that means and why it's so important and so forth. Mike's going to tell us about OneMedNet. They're providing imaging exchange solutions that help healthcare providers share imaging exams for more than 10 years. They recently moved and expanded into Ireland as well. A few years ago, they pivoted hard into the imaging real-world data space. You're going to talk about what that means and why they do it and so forth. Mike, can we start off having you tell us a little bit about both yourself and about OneMedNet and what you do?
Sure. Thank you, Scott. You know, during my 30-plus years in healthcare, I've primarily been on the vendor side, mainly focused on providing IT solutions for radiology and cardiology. Along the way, I've been with startups, multinationals, led acquired businesses, and even led my own software engineering company. However, the theme has always been the same, new business development. I really enjoy proving out new emerging markets, particularly those serving healthcare IT, which is exactly what led me to imaging real-world data in OneMedNet. As you mentioned, OneMedNet has been a longtime player in the image exchange business, and really proud of our presence and rollout in a recent rollout in Ireland, which really assisted them with the COVID situation there. But in parallel to me identifying the real world data space, they had done the same. And so when I joined them about 2.5 years ago, it was a wonderful match made in heaven. So that's how we ended up here, and thrilled to be here. Thanks for having us on.
And thank you, Mike, for joining us. Real-world data has been around for a long time in the form of health claims data and so forth. Talk about the emergence of clinical real-world data and how it's emerged, and why is clinical real-world data so important? And tell us, for those of us that are lay people, what does clinical real-world data mean, and why is the industry so excited about this clinical real-world data?
Absolutely. Well, you know, claims data has and will continue to be very useful at the population health level. And we say claims data, it's exactly what it is. It's when a health institution makes a claim for reimbursement, as an example, they need to state a number of things, and that data can be very valuable and has been. But again, you tend to analyze that data at what I'll call the population health level. And you're usually analyzing hundreds of thousands, if not hundreds of millions of patient lives. And this data was primarily focused on basic research and to influence many of the financial aspects of healthcare. And a simple example is like payer coverage. More recently, what's encouraging with the claims data itself is that it has played a role, an insightful role, when analyzing clinical outcomes. However, in the absence of core clinical data, and what I'm referring to there is an easy one, is the electronic health record, but also think about diagnostic areas like imaging and labs, and then into treatment areas like oncology. We were only scratching the surface, but this clinical data can be analyzed not only at the population health level, but it has all the granularity required to, you know, really narrow things down. It has the fidelity to enable real precision medicine and real personal care. And that's what all of us are striving to deliver to the market.
And you're starting to hear more buzz, more discussion around clinical real-world data. And it sounds interesting and exciting, but why is there starting to be more buzz and more discussion on this topic currently?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say which came first, the recognition of the impact that clinical real-world data could bring to the market, or was it the technology that makes it possible, and that's really what spawned this? In some ways, it doesn't really matter, but let's get the technology piece out of the way. Clearly, advances in technology made the previously impossible possible, and what I'm referring to there is think about how messy clinical data is. And they've now, you know, these advances in technology have really helped us be able to bring all that together. And some of those advances are clearly in data analytics, interoperability, and we hear all the time about compute power and storage, and certainly most recently, artificial intelligence. But policy deserves an awful lot of credit, and I think this is an area where many people don't give them credit and may not even be aware of it. I think most notably the 21st Century CARES Act, especially when you look at policies that promote information sharing and actually punish information blocking. This woke the market up. And then you pair this with the FDA's recognition that clinical real-world data can significantly contribute to safer and more effective solutions. Now, those things roll off our tongue all the time, but because the real-world data touches so many people, all kinds of diversity, the FDA is confident that as we embrace it, we'll deliver safer, more effective solutions, and now more inclusive solutions. When you run clinical trials, you can't include as much of the population as you'd like, but if you do a retrospective real-world data study, you can. And I would argue the Cures Act, with the FDA's strong encouragement, in some cases pragmatically mandating it, that's kind of been a 1-2 punch. But we have to give some credit to the healthcare providers themselves. Just 2-3 years ago, they were hesitant to mention that they were leveraging patient clinical data. But over the past 2 years, that's really changed. Progressive institutions feel like they have to participate in real-world data initiatives. It's a fundamental responsibility. Why is that? They must include their patient population in the development of novel healthcare solutions. Otherwise, they're not representing their patients in the world that they should. And then taking it one step further, they've actually come around to the fact that they have an obligation to leverage every asset they have, and this can include monetizing data. And then finally, I'll say the life science industry, they've recognized this too. They've not been standing on the sidelines. They now, with real-world data, have an opportunity to bring solutions to market faster and less expensively. I know it sounds, you know, like utopia, but it really is a win for everyone, the providers, life sciences, and most importantly, patients and their families.
And take a moment, Mike. Many progressive systems, large health systems, providers moving forward with all kinds of uses of real-world data. But why are some not? Why are some still sitting on the sidelines when it comes to the use of real-world data?
Well, I try to be empathetic, but I have to admit it is frustrating. But I suspect some of them are struggling with a mix of the following three issues. First, and we really have to relate to this, they're in the business of delivering care. They're not in the business of collecting and preparing data for use in clinical studies. And COVID has really narrowed their focus to care delivery, and that's understandable. Second, they struggle to get past several aspects of data governance. And the two most obvious ones are, should they, can they share de-identified clinical patient data in the first place? And then even if they can, how do they do that in compliance with regulations? And then finally, third, they wrestle with how to monetize patient data. Is it consistent with their mission? And I think many of them are coming around to the fact that it is, because they need to bring every asset to advance care. So while these issues are understandable, they're also dated. Patients want the best care, and providers need to leverage every asset they have to deliver the best care. And frankly, the train's leaving the station. One can even argue it's left the station, with more than 25% of U.S. health systems participating with industry today. You know, in addition to having their patients' communities' data included in the development of novel solutions, many are getting rewarded, whether it be monetarily or if it's early access to novel solutions, or perhaps it's even just access to novel clinical trials. And then for the laggards in life science, in the life science space, they simply haven't kept up. Their competitors are investing many millions of dollars in real world data. And this, you know, bore itself out in a Deloitte survey that's now about a year and a half old. Many life science companies consider harnessing real world data as a corporate strategic imperative. So again, I encourage those who have been waiting, who have been standing by, to join in. It's a wonderful cause, and it really can help everybody.
And Mike, take a moment as you shift to imaging real-world data. What are you seeing there? Why is that getting a lot of attention, particularly in the imaging sector?
Sure. I think that probably the biggest reason is that imaging itself, can be a surrogate endpoint for a clinical study or trial. And what that means in simple terms is imaging can bear out proof of effectiveness. And the most illustrative example is if you can demonstrate that a tumor is shrinking, that can be a proof of extending survival rates. That's certainly much more humane than obviously just waiting to see who lives and who dies. However, unfortunately, over the past 20 years, prospective imaging clinical trials have been perceived to be costly and time-consuming. And that's one of the most promising pieces about imaging real-world data, is that it isn't as costly. And one of the best examples there might be new uses for approved drugs. So drugs that are already on the market, if you can identify new uses and that evidence can be harvested from real-world data, you can save years of time and hundreds of millions of dollars. And as I mentioned earlier, frequently you can better assess the safety and effectiveness across a greater cross-section of the population. So again, imaging itself plays a significant role in the enthusiasm behind real-world data.
Claims data seems so not simple, but so voluminous, but it seems very, very direct and didactic. Clinical real-world data, imaging real-world data seem much more complex to gather, to use, to make use of. How do life sciences companies make use of sort of this imaging real-world data, this clinical real-world data? What does that look like?
Scott, you couldn't be more correct, at least in my eyes. Claims, you know, has its complexities, but arguably relative to the clinical side, the claims data is nice and tidy. It's structured. It has a fairly common, well-understood language. Clinical data isn't like that. And as we mentioned before, clinical data serves delivering care, not generating real-world data. And consequently, it can be extremely complex. And believe it or not, not just from health system to health system, but even a hospital within a health system to a sister hospital, they struggle to share patient files and information. So, you know, life science companies, recognizing that real-world data had this promise, they tried working directly with healthcare providers. However, just like healthcare providers, life sciences isn't well-suited in their fundamental capabilities for finding, enriching, curating, and normalizing data. And this is particularly the case when you do it across multiple providers, which you typically have to do if you're working with the FDA. They don't want to do a study just associated, say, for perhaps with just one hospital. And all of this is, if you work directly between life sciences and healthcare, it's not only very costly and time-consuming, but very error-prone since neither group really has it as a core competence. Consequently, what arose but the need for companies that specialize in curating real-world data? And the bar for that just keeps moving up, especially when you're curating in support of regulatory clearances and approvals. In September, the FDA came out with their first round of draft guidance for the use of real-world data in regulatory decision-making. And it reads really more like a prospective clinical trial than a retrospective study. It's very, very demanding when it comes to the quality, the detail, and the certainty of the data that you have. And Scott, I know that's not the intent of this, but we easily could have a several hour long podcast just on the basics of curating to the requirements of delivering regulatory grade real world data.
No, I bet that's absolutely correct. I mean, so many different requirements, regulations, and standards, and so forth to make this work, make it work right. Give us a few examples of what this looks like in terms of curating process and so forth. Just a few examples so the audience can get a better sense of it.
Sure. Let's start with the curators and some of the processes that sit behind them. The curators must understand the clinical study. So in other words, what is the sponsor trying to prove? Then they must understand the why and the how the candidate real-world data was generated in the first place. They're frequently bridging these two disparate clinical worlds. Examples of that may be, again, think of the example of taking an approved drug, but looking to see if there are new applications for that. Well, you, in that case, may be looking at images, looking at patients that might have been in a car accident or had headaches or whatever, but they also happen to be taking that drug. And why might that be? Well, you're looking for imaging evidence inside their bodies. They wouldn't have otherwise had those imaging exams. So that's an example. To take that further, they must also, these curators must also have strong technical understanding of data management. Where are the data elements? What form do they take? And do they qualify as evidence? All of this enthusiasm about real world data is that it can be turned into evidence, initially in research to help you discover new solutions, but ultimately is evidence to regulatory bodies like the FDA so that you will get a clearance or approval to bring these things to market. OneMedNet is fortunate to have some of the world's best curators backed by some of the best technologies that really helps their efforts. However, what I just talked about is really the glamour part of curation, making sense of a mess and ultimately bringing new solutions to market. That's where the curators really get to strut their stuff or show off. In spite of OneMedNet's great, you know, tech that we have behind the solutions, the curators still end up reading through reports to confirm NLP output. And NLP, for those of you who don't know, is natural language processing. And it does a pretty good job today. The technology is really, really good, but we can't rely on that alone. We have to confirm the output of NLP as an example. We also have to ensure that no PHI is left behind. Sometimes PHI is burned into images, and we have a lot of technologies that catch that, but we ultimately lay eyes on the images to make sure that, in fact, they did their jobs. Obviously, we need to QC the deliverables to ensure we meet really strict stratification of cases. And one of the scary parts about this is the FDA is very familiar with the possibilities, the potential of the technology. So they're very, very demanding. They want really fine stratification. And then finally, of course, the curators have to make sure everything matches up. And it's not unusual for us to even provide the traditional case report forms that would come out of a prospective clinical trial. We now provide that out of a retrospective clinical study.
So the creation of this data to make it useful for true studies and true commercialization is very intense, both technology intense and people intense, and a lot of skills and a lot of brights. Talk about your OneMedNet's emerging role in this space and sort of what sets sort of OneMedNet apart in working in specifically regulatory grade imaging, real world data. What sort of sets OneMedNet apart?
Absolutely, yeah, sure. We're really proud of the quality of the data we provide, regardless of the level. And I'll contrast regulatory grade with AI training data. A lot of times AI training data can be, less particular. And so you provide it in bulk, and it's usually much less expensive. It's when you're training your AI algorithms. But at the opposite end of the spectrum, you're providing regulatory grade data. And as we mentioned, it's data that regulatory agencies like the FDA would consider for influencing their decisions around approval and clearances. Well, that's the area we're most proud of, and it's the quality and timeliness of our on-demand regulatory grade real-world data. And I snuck a word in there on you, which is on-demand. Some competitors can provide regulatory grade data, but it takes them years and not weeks to deliver. And then, of course, we have other competitors that provide data on demand but don't provide real world data suitable to influencing regulatory decision making. So I would say that's what sets us apart.
Mike, it's really impressive what you folks do. You could see the opportunities for both great life sciences companies, pharma companies, device companies, as well as for health systems and providers and so forth. Any final thoughts you wanted to share with us today on what you do and around imaging real-world data and so forth?
Absolutely, yeah. While we're very, very proud of the quality and timeliness of our product, imaging real-world data, We are most proud of helping the market realize this promise. It's an emerging promise. It's really exciting, and it's going to have some bumps along the way, but we're really helping drive that. In the end, you know, this is about affecting people's lives in a positive way. And if in some way we can help make the lives of providers, life sciences, patients, and quite frankly, their families a little bit better with real-world data, we're achieving our mission. And I really appreciate the time today. Many thanks to you and to Becker's Hospital Review for the opportunity to speak with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I want to thank Michael Chance, President, Chief Operating of OneMedNet, sharing it with us. Every time I get a chance to listen to and talk to Mike, I get a new sense of what this is and what's going on with imaging real-world data and real-world data uses on the clinical side and how it's so important. I want to thank you again, Mike, for joining us today, and thank you to OneMedNet. What a magnificent effort and undertaking. I learn a lot every time I talk to you. Thank you very much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast.
Likewise. Thanks again.